Welcome to the Wealth Matters Podcast, where investors come together to better understand how to build passive cash flow and create generational wealth without all the confusing mumbo jumbo. Here's your host and co-author of Amazon number one bestseller, Alpesh Pamar.
Welcome to Wealth Matters Podcast. I am going to have a firefighter who is an 18-year veteran of the New York City Fire Department and currently serves as a lieutenant in the borough of Queens. Until recently, he also worked part-time as an emergency room RN at a level one trauma center. So Tim's, and his name is, of course, Timothy Lyons. He goes by Tim, of course. But Tim's initial goal with real estate was to create passive income and in turn be able to spend more time with his wife and three little kids. And that was my goal as well. And I also, of course, I also have two daughters. I see that you have two daughters. I mean, three daughters as well. So yeah, it's crazy, right? After partnering on a multifamily property, it seems that you saw firsthand power of real estate investing as an opportunity to create passive income and build wealth for family. So Tim started Cityside Capital with the goal of not only growing his own portfolio, but also to help others realize the power that real estate investing can have on creating passive income. So welcome, Tim.
Well, thank you for that very kind introduction. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Absolutely. So, Tim, I already spilled the beans, right, that you are a firefighter. You were an, you worked at the emergency room RN. Tell us something interesting or funny about yourself.
Oh, God. I mean, we could have a whole podcast about that. But I have really good dance moves. Really not going to, you know, hear that on too many podcasts, I guess. But that's how I got my wife. We were in college together and I, you know, she saw the dance moves and she couldn't resist. So.
Right, right. So that's going to be our ending of the show, right? Oh, on a Bollywood music, though.
Oh, yeah. Anything.
So let's talk about this. 18 years in as a firefighter and lieutenant now. What was your first investment and how did it work out for you?
Yeah. You know, look, I mean, New York City firefighter, ER nurse, I was, you know, the guy trading time for money, had a great time doing it, right? Two fantastic careers. I thoroughly enjoyed going to work every day. But trading my time for money became, you know, horrific when I had three little girls at home. Right. So, you know, I basically got myself educated, right? Reading books, you know, listening to books, podcasts. And what it came down to was, you know, I needed equity, right? So, whether that was going to be through owning a business and running a business or from real estate, I needed to get myself into the equity game. Right. And at the time, I already had two jobs. I really didn't want to start another business. So I went to the real estate route. So my first investment was a three-unit, apartment, you know, building, which was great because, you know, I did it with a friend because I was scared, right? I had never done it before.
Right.
I had incredible limiting beliefs, right? Even though I was like into the zone with the education and the podcasts and meetups and everything, I was still nervous. So I did it with a friend. The good thing about the three unit was that it still qualified for, you know, conventional financing, right? So
triplex.
So all these things, you know, kind of, you know, had me kind of go not from a single family because I was nervous about a single family. I wanted a duplex, triplex, or quad, and I settled on the triplex for the first deal.
Oh, that's great. And when was this?
This was November of 2019.
Oh, wow. So right before COVID. So pretty recent. Wow. That's that's crazy. And this was in New York or Connecticut? Or?
Yeah. So when I was living in New York, I really couldn't find a whole lot that cash flowed in a neighborhood that I wanted to be invested in, right? There's plenty of cash flowing assets in tough neighborhoods.
Tell me about it. I'm in California.
Yes, sir.
It doesn't work at all.
Right. Especially when you read the books and they're like talking about the 1% rule. You're like, I don't know if that's happening. So anyway, so I went to a city called New Haven, Connecticut, which is about an hour and a half away. People are familiar with Yale University. That's where, you know, all that happens. So there's a little section of town called Westville, And but my buddy lived up in that area, and you know, he's like, listen, this is a great little cash flow neighborhood. So, you know, it was, I was able to get there and get back. It wasn't that big of a deal. So that's where we went.
Got it. And how much did you pay for it? And do you still own it?
So we paid $276 for it. It was on the market for, I think, $330. We paid $276. Nice. It was a motivated seller, and it was on the MLS. I mean, pretty crazy how that works out. And obviously it was pre-COVID, right? So it hasn't, yes, it hadn't yet hit that COVID pricing. $6,200 a year in taxes. And the rents hadn't been raised in a decade. So it was like primed for, you know, there was a lot of deferred maintenance to be handled, but because we got at a great basis, we were able to do some of that while we're out of bat. And the second part of your question, I do not own it anymore. I realized that I hated being a landlord. Absolutely hated it. It became my third job. Yes. It was not passive as I thought it was going to be. So we sold it in 2 years, and I was able to double my capital and then some, just, you know, with that COVID pricing.
Right.
And yes. Yeah, so we got rid of it.
No, that's great. Perfect timing. So you started in November of 2019 with Triplex. How did you go from 3 units to over 6,000 units in just about 3.5 years?
It sounds crazy, doesn't it? It sounds right. Like it's almost too good to be true. Yeah. Sometimes I do have to pinch myself, but you know, when I wanted that landlord experience, I wanted to know what it was like. And you know, you were in Jersey, right? Like my lens through which I view a lot of things, for better or for worse, is like, you're guilty till proven innocent. Like I need, yes, to be the guy. I need to be the person.
That's,
I need,
exactly,
to touch
how
it.
How I do it.
Right? I want to mow the lawn. I want to shovel the snow. Yeah. I want to collect the rent. I want to do everything. But what I realized, you know, very quickly is that it's a lot, and it wasn't passive. And to be scalable, I was going to have to make a lot of changes in my life, and I wasn't exactly ready to make those changes yet. So you know, right around the time I bought that, I stopped the nursing. I went, you know, headlong into real estate, and instead of devising a plan to tackle 10 or 20 or 30 of these, you know, triplexes, I kept on hearing about multifamily. And so I got myself a multifamily coach who was in the space doing the thing that I wanted to do, multifamily syndication. And I learned everything, right? It was COVID all of a sudden. I had just, yes, kind of signed on with this guy, and it was COVID. I'm like, what did I just do?
You had a lot more time now.
I just wasted all this money. No one's going to be buying real estate. No one's selling. Everyone's scared. Everyone's locked up and maxed up. And, you know, there was a cancel rent movement going on. You know, it was like crazy, right?
Yeah.
So I really leaned into the education piece, just trying to find out as much as I could and study, right? Because as a New York City firefighter, it's a quick little story. As a New York City firefighter, I work in a very poor socioeconomic neighborhood. And it was actually the neighborhood in which I work, which is Corona/Elmhurst, Queens. It was deemed like the ground zero for COVID for New York City. So we're talking about refrigerated trucks outside the hospitals, people dropping dead in the street of basically COVID. It was really bad, right? So I moved out of my house for 9 weeks, and my mother-in-law moved into my house for 9 weeks because we didn't know a lot about the disease yet. We just, it was so up in the air. And I had a brand new baby at the time. So during that 9 weeks, instead of getting like depressed and, you know, anxious, whatever, I woke up at 5 a.m. every morning. I went to bed at like 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock midnight. And during those times, I just read and I called people, and I was on mastermind calls and Zoom calls and calling brokers and calling, you know, community banks and establishing relationships because I had the time to do it. Basically, coming out of COVID, right, August of 2020, I partner with my coach on a 43 unit in Pennsylvania. And that's how I got my start into the multifamily world, specifically, you know, multifamily syndication.
Oh, that's awesome. So you went from 3 units to, of course, 6,000 plus units. What were some of the obstacles in this journey?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of obstacles, right? But I, you know, because I was defiantly committed to learning, to to leaning into the process, I think some of those obstacles were knocked down pretty easily because of what was happening at the time, right? I don't know that I could do the same thing today, but some of the obstacles were, listen, it's you know, bigger price tags, right? Much bigger price tags. I mean, the 43 unit we did in Pennsylvania was $5.7 million. The only other deal I'd done prior to that was $276,000. I mean,
right.
It's an order of magnitude larger, right? So yeah, like, you know, yeah, just so, you know, we're talking about bigger numbers. We're talking about other people's money, right? We're talking about investors. We're talking about teams, right? What the biggest hurdle that I had to get over mentally was that I wanted to do everything and have control about everything in my portfolio. Whereas in on the commercial side, it's all about building out teams. Mm-hmm. It's about building out teams. It's about having boots on the ground, a good asset manager, property manager, you know, due diligence, financing, legal, accounting. Like, there's so many different team members to make a successful project work. So it's really kind of getting on board to that team mentality versus the I want to do everything mentality. And then, you know, deal flow, right? Like, you know, you can't just go on, there's no MLS for, you know, commercial real estate deals. A lot of it, the deal flow comes from brokers and broker relationships and off-market opportunities. You know, they always say like, you know, oh, but there's LoopNet, you know, oh, then people say, well, yeah, that's where deals go to die, right? Or, you know, yes, it's already picked over. It's, you know, so like, it's a totally different game. You can't just go on the MLS or, you know, yeah, it's a totally different, you know, way to approach, you know, acquisitions. And then like raising capital, right? Raising capital was a huge thing for me. I didn't think I could raise 50 cents, nonetheless, yes, 50,000, 100,000, you know, a million at a time. So, you know, there's all these different things that come into the commercial side that the residential side doesn't, you know, necessarily have.
Got it. No, that's very interesting. And I'm, you know, pretty much, I have, because I started investing back in 2015, and I also started raising capital, of course, back in 2019. But I haven't been able to jumpstart all the way to like 6,000 units. And of course, my focus has shifted into mobile home parks and senior housing. So, but, you know, when we get started, and by the time we get to this point, right, of course, things have changed and you learn a lot more, right? So knowing what you know now, what would you change or how would you do things differently?
Oh, boy. I mean, I would lean into the process a lot sooner. You know, I wanted to start with the 3-unit because it was familiar. I had bought and sold 2 other homes before. I knew how the financing worked. I knew what a closing looked like. I knew the anatomy of a deal. But I probably would have gone to the commercial side out of the gate, right? Because why not? If you could do 3 units, you could do 13. If you could do 13, you could do 30, you know, and if you could do 30, you could probably do 300. I probably would have gone that way first. You know, I also might have invested as an LP, limited partner, you know, earlier in my career, maybe with a retirement account or maybe with the cash, because I think as an LP, you can really learn a lot in, you know, what's available to you and what kind of markets and what kind of asset classes. So I might've done that a little differently too, but to be on the active side, I think I would have gotten myself educated a lot sooner. I think I would have gone to a coach a lot sooner. I agonized over the decision whether to do that, because I just wasn't ready to hear maybe the information, or I had these massive limiting beliefs. But being on the other side of those limiting beliefs and having a little bit of a taste of, you know, some success in a short amount of time, really leads me to believe that, I should have started this train a long time ago and gone bigger and faster and, obviously within, you know, conservative, you know, type right of principles, but, you know, I think I would have done that a little quicker.
Got it. And so, you know, you are at a stage where you're scaling up really fast. What is your goal now?
So my goal is to, I want to retire. Well, I don't want to retire, but I'd like to retire at 20 years. So I have about 22 months left in the New York City Fire Department. Because, you know, in addition to a job, it's really a way of life. You know, it's a culture, it's a way of life. I mean, it's something that's almost inexplainable to, you know, non-FDNY first responders. I just love it. I still love going to the firehouse. There's never a day that I literally am like, dang, I have to go to work today. You know, so I say that I'm going to be ready in 22 months to retire and do this full time, because I also love doing this. But that's next on the horizon. people ask me all the time, you know, Tim, like, you know, you're a capital raiser, you know, don't you want to do your own deals? And what I always tell them is that, you know, I love the seat that I get to sit in today, because I say that I'm actively passive, right? Nice. I get to work with 9, 10, 11 different operators, you know, across the country, different asset classes, different markets, different opportunities, heavy value add, light value add, you know, development deals, you know, industrial, self-storage, multifamily. So I get to be actively passive in the sense that I get to evaluate all these deals and kind of cherry pick the ones that I want to invest in personally and the ones that I want to, you know, offer to my investors as well. It's a great process. I don't know, you know, a year or two ago, I would have said to this exact same question, I would have said, I want to, you know, season my investor list over the next couple of years and then go out and do my own deals. And that still may happen, but you know what? I got to tell you, where I am today is it makes all the difference. It's great for my work-life balance. It's great for my building up cash, you know, passive cash flow. Right. So that's what I think I'm going to be doing.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly what I do as well. You know, I focus on mobile home parks, senior housing, and of course, self-storage as well. And, you know, I work with about 4 or 5 operators now, you know, so try to keep a list. But, you know, that way I'm able to diversify among different type of real estate as well as different markets. So that leads me to my next question. What markets are you currently focusing on?
So we're heavy in, you know, Phoenix, Texas, Atlanta, Florida. We're trying to break into the Carolinas. We just haven't found an operator in the Carolinas just yet that we're, you know, dying to work with. Or that has, you know, we do have an operator, but they just, you know, deal flow isn't there right now, right? The bid-ask spread right. is still, you know, way too far apart. So, you know, so those are our main markets, our core markets. We also have a fantastic, fantastic operator up in the Midwest in the Michigan, Ohio region. So we've done a lot of deals up in that way too, which, you know, which really quick, like, you know, people I tell, you know, oh, I do a lot of deals in Michigan and, you know, just over the border in Ohio. And they're like, what? Yeah. They're like, that's not great. And I'm like, no, actually it is. It may not have the sexy pools and the palm trees right. and, the, you know, fancy gyms and the, you know, all the amenities, but it's a cash flow play. It's incredibly, well run. And, you know, I always say, like, you know, you can live where you want, but you got to invest where the numbers make sense. Right.
Of course. So. Yeah. And I live by that as well.
Absolutely.
How are you approaching the current real estate market?
With caution, right? With caution. I mean, I wish, God, I wish somebody would just tell me what the heck is going on, right?
Right.
I subscribe to a bunch of, you know, macroeconomic forecasting services, you know, real yep. estate data, real estate analytics. Commercial interest rate analytics. I mean, I'm constantly reading and I'm trying to see where the puck is going, right? And I just don't know, right? And I don't think anybody knows.
Nope.
But how we're approaching it is, look, you know, we are, you know, we have had multiple calls with our operators over the last, say, 18 months, and we're focused on operations, right? If you can run the property and you bought it at a good basis and you have debt that's not going to run out of time, you have to run the business plan, right? You can't get lazy. You can't get soft. You can't yes. get any of those things. You have to stay on top of the income, the expenses, the NOI. You have to run the property, you know, and do the business plan. Are you going to do CapEx projects? Are you going to do renovations? Are you going to scale it back? Are you going to do distributions? Are you going to scale them back? You know, are you looking for a refinance? But does the NOI, you know, support a refinance at the current rates? You know, there's so many things that's going on right now that on the operation side, on the acquisition side, you know, it's really, you know, we're trying to position ourselves for, you know, the folks that are maybe running out of time on their debt, right? Or, you know, or who don't have rate caps, and people are bleeding cash left and right. And that's where the off-market deals are really coming to groups, you know, that we work with now. So we're in a good position to start buying some of those assets up. But again, you know, I've never met an underwriter that says that they do crazy off the wall underwriting. Everything's always quote unquote conservative, But that's why, because we work at a broker dealer, you know, we have our own underwriting team just to double check some stuff and to make sure that his assumptions are in line with, you know, what we're trying to accomplish.
Well, that's great. So let's talk about some of your deals. What has been your best deal so far?
The best deal so far, this is a tough one. I mean, our last full cycle deal went full cycle in 19 months, and we had about a 68% return of capital to investors. That Wow. was pretty strong. My current deal that we still have is probably our 148 unit in Sarasota, Florida. It's just going really well. We've already refinanced into permanent debt. We've cashed out our preferred equity provider, so the cash flow was there. And instead of being 148 units, I wish it was 1400 units, you know, but it's not. Right. So but yeah, that's probably my favorite deal at the moment.
What has been your worst deal, and what did you learn from it?
The worst deal was a deal we did in Texas. I don't want to give too much away, right? But you know, the timing probably wasn't ideal. The seller wasn't, I think, forthcoming with some of the information that we would have liked to have known going into the deal. At the time, the Fed was saying that they're not thinking about raising interest rates, and meanwhile, they went on a 14 or 15 month, yes. You know, run of raising interest rates anywhere from 25 to 75 basis points. So I think there was a confluence of events that kind of just, you know, made us really work very hard to, you know, increase NOI, get through a refinance, and, you know, finally stabilize the asset. So, but it was a little bit more stressful than all the other deals combined, you know, so.
Right. Now, this is great. Thank you so much, team, for sharing a lot of golden nuggets. Are you ready for fire round?
Oh, that's my middle name. That's my middle name. Yep.
Would you be changing business or investment strategy because of the current environment?
Not changing, but leaning in, I'd say. You know, we're you know, doing more investor education, you know, because I think a lot of people just don't understand what, you know, what do interest rates mean? What does the current debt environment mean? So I think a lot more education for investors is definitely on CitySide Capital's to-do list.
Favorite nonfiction book? It could be investment, real estate, self-development.
So this is without a doubt, it's called The Wealthy Gardener by John Sofuric. Actually, I mean, it's kind of like half fiction, half story, you know, real life. It's a mix, but it's about investing. It's got golden nuggets about life, personal growth and development. And it kind of tells the story as a real estate investor and, chiropractor, and how we kind of, it's just masterful. It's a great book.
Okay. I have not read it. I'll have to check it out. Any tool or website you recommend or you cannot live without?
So we use Google Workspace for our business. So the calendar, the Gmail, you know, domains, everything, integrations. I don't understand all of it. You know, I mean, you're in San Francisco. You probably understand a lot of stuff. But my whole business is really run with the Google platform. So it's just I can't live without that.
Yeah, that's what we use as well. And of course, you know, in my previous life, I was an IT engineer. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Any advice for investors?
Just get educated about money and debt and real estate and taxes. I mean, as much as I thought I knew back before I started this whole journey, I didn't know anything. And I wish I wasn't so ignorant and had these really bad, you know, limiting beliefs that held me back, right? Because the minute I started to learn about, you know, how money is created, how money velocity, you know, affects, you know, wealth, how taxes affect wealth, and how to, you know, basically align yourself with taxes, not work against them or be scared of them. You know, the three buckets of income, right? Active income, portfolio income, and passive income, and what those all mean as far as taxation and you know, just all these things. I mean, get educated about money. And, you know, people will say, oh, that sounds great, Tim. Well, how? And I'll say, look, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, right into the Cash Flow Quadrant. That should be your second book.
That's the best book ever, Cash Flow Quadrant. Yeah.
Cash Flow Quadrant. That's your second book. The third book is by, you know, Robert's CPA called Tax-Free Wealth.
Oh, yeah. Tom Wheelwright.
by Tommy Wheelwright. And then, you know, once you have that trilogy right there, I mean, your eyes are going to be wide open to what's out there. And I'm telling you, you're going to be starving for more. You're going to go, Tim, what is the next book to read after those three? And I got, believe me, I got plenty of books.
Yes.
I got plenty that I can share titles, right? But after those three, I mean, if you really want to dive into the money piece of it and really understand how the dollars work, you have to read the Creature from Jekyll Island.
Jekyll Island, yeah.
Right. Once you have that, whether you're a finance person, a doctor, a lawyer, an IT guy, a firefighter, a paramedic, a nurse, it doesn't matter what you do. Once you understand about how money works, how it's created, how banks work, how leverage works, how taxes work, where are you on the cash flow quadrant? How can you, you know, take your assets and buy, you know, cash flow producing assets? I'm telling you, everything makes sense, and it's not that hard. If Tim the fireman, Tim the ER nurse can do this, believe me, you can do it too.
That's great. How do you give back?
So we are supporters of the Tunnel to Towers Fund, which is they pay for homes for deceased members of service, whether they're the military or first responders. So I'm big into that. I also coach my girls' teams, right? Girls lacrosse, girls basketball. That's what I do in my town. It's a lot of fun. And I also love to mentor, you know, up and coming investors, right? I mean, people who either hear me on a podcast, they're constantly reaching out. They want to buy me coffee or lunch or dinner or whatever, or just hop on a Zoom call. And for the time being, I love doing it, right? Because what I found in real estate was that somebody who was just a couple of rungs ahead of me on the ladder.
Yes.
They always had their hand down, right?
Yep,
kind of pulling other people up.
They were always helping, yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. And I really appreciated that. So I try to get back that way too.
Oh, that's great. How can my listeners reach out to you?
You can head over to citysidecap.com. All my stuff is right there. You can schedule no obligation free call. You can email me, tim@citysidecap.com, or you can call us 516-521-7762.
Okay. Thank you so much, Tim, for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Wealth Matters podcast. If you enjoyed it, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes so others can enjoy the show too. Have a great week and happy investing.